This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9-1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
You should be saving for the future, but savings accounts suck, and investing can be scary. We combine the ease of savings with the real returns of investing. We call it Savevesting, and it's only available in our new app, Stairs. Stairs offers 4 to 6% returns, no fees, and you can withdraw anytime. Do your future a favor. Visit StairsApp.com today.
Hear that? Is that America cheering? Or a sausage patty sizzling to perfection? It's time to cheer for Egg McMuffin and fresh cracked eggs at McDonald's. It's time to wake up to the aroma of freshly baked biscuits and treat yourself to a real honest-to-goodness morning meal. Breakfast, it's on at McDonald's. Now enjoy a large iced coffee for just $2. Add a breakfast sandwich to make a meal. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Dispensing cannabis business knowledge beyond a million square feet of cultivation space, CannabisRadio.com proudly presents Blunt Business, harvested by Strainwise Consulting. Together, we will navigate the challenges and opportunities of one of the most profitable industries on earth. Join us each episode to hear our weekly roundtables and interviews with industry professionals. Now, let's delve into some Blunt Business with your host.
And thank you one and all for joining us for another edition of Blunt Business here on CannabisRadio.com. So glad to have you with us. Wherever you find this show, which I know there's so many different places, we are ubiquitous throughout the sphere looking for this program, whether it's through all the major companies that are podcast providers, Apple, Amazon, Google, and then we got Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Spreaker, and so many other places. Thank you for joining us. My next guest is a successful trial attorney. But we're not going to talk about a law on this show. That's a little teaser. He's also a restaurateur, an investor, an entrepreneur, and also serves as general counsel to one of the nation's largest private security companies. But there's so much that this gentleman has to offer for us here. He is the founding partner and director of communication for six labs. I'm here with Joe Ori. Joe, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
So we're going to talk about Six Labs today here on the program, not to be confused with Six Flags. I want to make sure everybody gets the distinction here. You've opened up I can almost do that because you're opening up a 45,000 square foot, and if I just said that there, they would think, it's the Great Adventure. No, I'm just kidding. It's a cultivation lab in Michigan. It's a fully licensed, state-of-the-art, pharmaceutical-grade facility with a boutique grow operation designed to produce high-quality cannabis and craft batches. Interesting. Now, you said about this, quote, "Our cultivation lab features revolutionary low-energy lighting, a unique air system, and precision practices throughout that produces top-notch cannabis flowers with none of the harmful impurities." So take me through the facility real quick.
So, you know, thank you. You're actually accurate as to where, you know, we were headed and where we're at now. What we kind of, you know, came to the conclusion when we decided to jump into the cannabis space was, you know, we looked at it and said, well, you know, we're not the first people to the table. So what we wanted to do to separate ourselves from our competition was to create a facility. I hate to sound, you know, overstated, but it's a facility like no other. We toured around the country for about a year and went to and basically knocked on doors of cultivation facilities in California and Colorado and took some of the good things that we saw and took some of the bad things that we saw. And we said, well, let's try to create a facility that is, you know, forward thinking in the sense that, you know, we were looking at it that the federal government would probably at some point get involved, and we sort of considered, you know, FDA regulations, and we basically said, you know, let's create a facility that, you know, if the FDA one day does get involved in this and starts placing regulations
Now, Joe, the idea was, and I would imagine, oh, they're always trying to look at compliance or just really the regulatory standards. You wanted to always just go above, well above those standards than even what a state would even offer right now. Because, I mean, is it really the thought process that the state standards, and even for a state like Michigan, is that there's, it's kind of just the lowest denominator, and it's always a matter of that it's just a better practice to go ahead and place yourself much higher in standards, which is why you went through the extra work, and I'm guessing a lot of more money and resources to make sure this was up to such a spec.
Yes, we did. That's exactly correct. We basically said if the FDA gets involved and if our cannabis in our facility doesn't pass, then none of our competitors will pass. And, you know, not having the knowledge of what, you know, that's going to be, we basically said, let's just exceed every expectation. And yes, it was much more expensive. You know, we could have probably built a facility, you know, somewhere in the range of $6 to $8 million. And, you know, we spent well over $11 or $12 million doing it. And, you know, what we have now is every bit of a pharmaceutical quality, you know, facility. I mean, we've had multiple people come through our facility who have been in the cannabis business for many, many years. And we actually have agreements with some of our vendors to, you know, actually contractual agreements with some of our vendors to use our facility, you know, as a stage for their products. And, you know, we allow people to come through to take a look at it and tour the facility, and everyone is just floored when they walk in. And it's actually helped us. I mean, we've been able to land some major contracts with licensing deals with companies from California and Colorado, some of the biggest cannabis, you know, brands in the United States who are trying to enter the Michigan market, have come to our facility, have graded our cannabis, and based on that, they have, you know, signed long-term deals for licensing, which were, you know, all just done in the last, you know, 30 or 45 days. So it's been, it's a feather in our cap. And, you know, we were hoping to get to this place quickly. And, you know, we were lucky enough that people saw the vision that we did, and it seems to be the right path. So we're very happy. And, you know, we're just getting started, but, you know, we feel very confident that we're headed in the right direction.
And let's talk about that direction you're making. Six Labs is also looking forward to becoming the cannabis supply chain partner of choice for leading brands. And you're looking to launch your own brand that will appeal not only to consumers, but to businesses that need a trusted enabler brand partner. You also said this, quote, "We are offering consumers a new vision for the cannabis category, one that is more akin to a high-end beauty brand that focuses on experience rather than a high. We're providing the modern cannabis consumers the power of choice based in science," quote unquote. Talk to me about the vision and the brand that you're looking to go ahead and make.
So, you know, we have actually, we slow rolled out everything. And I know that sounds crazy in the cannabis industry, but we didn't want to, We didn't come out, you know, we've got a large facility, we can produce a lot of cannabis, but we didn't want to do that right away. We wanted to make sure our operations were all set before we rolled out even our wholesale cannabis flower. So we tried to perfect our systems and get everything ramped up. So we haven't, I know that's going to sound crazy, but we are going to roll out six different brands in Q2 and Q3 of this year. Each brand has a specific sort of place, as we feel, in the cannabis industry. You know, we have an everyday brand that's going to be called MI6. which is your good quality cannabis that is affordable for, you know, people who are on a budget. And then we have another brand called Candela, which is just a little higher grade up from that. And we're going to have a wellness brand. We also have, you know, an everyday brand called Strollers, which is the concept of, you know, people who are just, you know, going to take a walk through the park. And, you know, we're starting to focus on, you know, the old concepts of high THC, and let me get as high as we possibly can. You know, we have that available, but that's not our focus. We are doing a lot of research work with Israel. We have a lot of contacts in Israel, and they are at the forefront of research. And what we're finding out is that, you know, terpene profiles and, you know, CBD and THC combinations are really where this is headed, we believe, in the sense of sensation. So we also have a sensation base that we're going to be rolling out called Ritual. And we're going to have multiple different co-brands inside of Ritual, which will be basically sensation-based. We're trying to focus on sleep aids. We're trying to focus on, you know, anxiety. We're trying to focus on, you know, all kinds of different everyday usages for the brand. And then, you know, we obviously are going to have our medical grade brand as well. So, you know, we're in the stages of doing, you know, some research still to sort of perfect what we think, you know, is going to be the future of cannabis. But, you know, as you know, there's so much out there and so much research being done. I mean, I recently did a podcast where I think the woman who was speaking, she's got a company out of California, and she mentioned, and I haven't verified this, but she said that there's been over 12,000 clinical studies of cannabis as opposed to, you know, pharmaceutical, you know, I think she had mentioned that there was only 400 tests done on Ritalin. I remember her saying that before it went to market. And what we have, you know, in cannabis is so much higher than that. I honestly believe that the future, you know, I think that cannabis is ultimately going to be an ingredient. I think it already is headed toward that. And I think what we're going to find is, you know, that cannabis is going to be put into potentially, they're going to find usages for in current, you know, pharmaceutical models. And, you know, we won't know where that's going until it's federally legalized, until the government, you know, places their stamp on it. But I think that's where it's headed. So, you know, we're excited. I think there, you know, I'm reading articles that suggest, you know, alcohol sales between certain age groups, you know, in 21 to 30 have gone down 25% over the last couple of years. So, you know, we're hoping that, you know, it'll, you know, the cannabis will take off and it's more of an aspirational type of product. And
right. Before we go to break, I want to just unpack a couple of things that you made of the answer. So the patience to go ahead and take your time to go and build out what you're going to be doing in terms of facility and in terms of building what you have going forward with your product lines that are coming out. Real quickly, do you have a particular time frame as to when the product will become tested and ready for launch?
Yeah, so we're going to try to launch all six of them within 2 quarters. So okay. We're going to start launching. We're going to start putting, you know, we have about 65 retail partners already that have agreed to put our products on their shelves. So we're going to roll out MI6 very soon. We had a little bit of an issue with the packaging design, but we would have probably rolled that out this month. But I think we're going to be rolling out MI6 in March, and then we're going to obviously move next to Candela. And so we're hoping to roll all six brands out by the end of Q3 so that they're all placed on shelves by Q4.
That's very our goal. Ambitious.
I think we're going to meet it. It is ambitious. But you know what, though? It is ambitious, but we have been working this for the last 18 months. So, you know, it's not like we're just deciding overnight to put these brands out.
But I'm saying it is just to roll everything out. It's like, okay, if it's ready, it's ready.
Yeah.
I want to go and bring this up. Well, one other thing was, and we got a great to break next, was the fact of how you talked about where, you know, the research Israel's providing to you, that you're getting the kind of intel you're getting right now. And I think what it comes down to is just, you know, right now, this year, 2021, we need the CBD part of the industry to kind of weed itself out. I think what needs to happen is we need to identify and finally show the real lane that CBD can be in, that it has a space, you know, where it can be the crossover, I think, into mainstream, you know, health and beauty or you know, drugstore products. I think that's where that lies in. And it becomes the gateway into THC products, which you at this moment, until legalization comes into play, will only be in dispensaries, but I think that's what we have to have it as. But CBD doesn't need to be in the lane of THC. It's like you said, if it's in a combination, that's one thing, but I think that's where things need to go. And I just think there's just so many people that want to be on the market for CBD only because they see the mainstream concept of being able to get the product out to mass production. And I think that's what's going on now. And that's fine. But then again, it's like, just don't put a product out just to be putting a product out. And if you want to go ahead and target CBD to a much more hardcore audience that are cannabis consumers, there has to be some THC provided.
I agree. I think the ratios are where it's at. I mean, I've heard a lot of people, you know, the CBD has, you know, has its value. I'm not suggesting that it doesn't.
Absolutely.
However, what we're finding out in a lot of the clinical studies that, you know, that CBD ratios to THC are more effective. And that's sort of where we're honing in from a wellness perspective, in the sense that if you told someone, you know, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, you know, hey, well, we've got, you know, a cannabis product that has, you know, 7 to 10% THC, they'd be like, well, I don't want that. You know, everybody wants it in the 20s.
Yeah.
But when you look and you say, I've got a 10% THC, you know, and, you know, in a high CBD count, you know, that seems to be a little bit more effective for what that particular product is aiming to address. And it's a very slight, you know, psychological effect, sometimes none, you know, but what we're finding is that it's more effective for pain relief in many circumstances. And then obviously we have CBG, which I don't even think that they've unleashed the value of that. And, you know, I've heard stories, I can't confirm this, but, you know, we've heard that, you know, pharmaceutical companies are buying up cannabis that has CBG counts above 5% for $6,000-$7,000 a pound, because what they're trying to figure out is how to increase the CBG count in the plant, because CBG has clinically proven and through testing to have a similar pain relieving effect as some of the, you know, some of the drugs that we now know are very addictive. So,
well, Big Pharma wants to have the next big thing. They want to go and just find, yeah, where else can they find another profit margin, really to increase the profit margin. You know, obviously they're waiting for now a new presidential administration that'll hopefully bring in some kind of universal health care, offer some ways to, so that those companies can start then jacking up their prices again. But then if they're also offering other products, if they can go and say CBD, they're going to welcome that into the fold, then that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, exactly. They know that the opioids, you know, are a thing of the past, and they should be. You know, I had my own personal challenge with it. I was, you know, I was in college and playing football and had back surgery, and I was, you know, this is back, and I'm going to date myself, but I was back in 1989, 1990, 1991, and, you know, we didn't know what opioids did, and I was one of the lucky ones. I was 20 years old, 21 years old in college, getting, you know, 40 pill prescriptions of Oxycontin for back surgery. And I was taking it, and I felt very sick on it, and I just stopped taking it because I didn't feel well. And unfortunately, other people take it, and they get an incredible high from it. I was just lucky because I had it so available to me back then that I literally could have called my neurosurgeon up on the phone and said, I need a new prescription, you know, and cannabis was a supplement to that I found was pain relieving, just, you know, buying it in the black market. And now what we have is actual real science and clinical studies being done. And I think what we're headed toward is exactly what you said. The pharmacies are going to find the next big thing. And once they prove that this is effective and the government puts a stamp on it, and I think once the federal government does that, you know, then the jaded past of cannabis will completely be, you know, exonerated, and, you know, we'll move toward the future.
Oh, the gateway will be open. FDA will start approving more CBD-based products, included into the ingredients of some formulation. I could just see that happening sometime down the line. Let's go to a break real quick, Joe. We're going to go into that because, obviously, I produce shows, and I'm just breaking my own rules by just letting the time go by. I'm here with Joe Ori, the founding partner and director of communications for Six Labs, S-I-X, and we'll be back with more questions. We're going to talk about the Michigan industry as a whole and take a glance at it and what's been happening now after a short break.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Elevate elevate your everyday with that Shuggies feeling, with the sweet taste of Shuggies. Add a cup of Shuggies to your morning coffee. Ah, how sweet it is. Shuggies infuses cannabis and cane sugar to make it the perfect sweetener with benefits. Make your happy hour happier with a dunk of Shuggies in your drink. Order your Shuggies now at shoggies.com or find it in dispensaries throughout California. Whenever you crave a little sweet, pick up Shuggies, the sweet, sweet take anywhere treat.
I hope you didn't forget about us, because we're back with Blunt Business on CannabisRadio.com.
We're back with Joe Ory, co-founder of Six Labs, here on Blunt Business. We're talking about Michigan's cannabis industry. Let's talk about what's happened over the last 6 months. Leafly actually put a really comprehensive report about that, about cannabis sales. They're hitting a peak in July 2020 and begin trending downward. They're asking, what's going on? After the state's opening of first adult-use stores in 2019, adult-use and medical sales combined for $35 million in revenue in January 2020. By July, it was up to nearly $110 million in combined monthly sales. Then combined medical and adult-use sales hit $92 million in November 2020, and were buying it, broke the $100 million mark in December. So again, a significant drop-off. And what do you see about the sales roller coaster? What's going on? As you're entering this market now, as you say, and hopefully in a couple of quarters, you should have your product line in there. What's your outlook of the market going in?
Well, I have a lot to say about this. And I'm glad that, you know, that this was actually one of your choices for a subject, because as a founder and general counsel, you know, I look into obviously what's going on in the market and from a legal perspective. And, you know, I read the Leafly article when it came out, and I will give some credit to the author. But unfortunately, I think the author should have done one thing differently, and they should have looked at this one statistic that I think defines the entire problem. And I think you'll agree with me, because it's indisputable. So the author, you know, as you know, she cited, you know, COVID as a reason possibly for, you know, people not having, you know, their stimulus checks and whatnot, and poor product lineups and competition from unlicensed growers, the caregiver market. And I think if you really look at this one statistic, this is the only thing you need to look at. And we found this because we're very interested in what is going on. And I'll tell you this. The price compression that occurred in the last 3 months is unprecedented in any cannabis market in the United States. And when I say this, I'm talking about from, I believe, September to September, October to now. The price of per pound of cannabis went from 3,000 in Michigan, went from 3,000 a pound to for wholesale to about 1,500 a pound. And then that's unprecedented. Now, we've seen those shifts occur in Oregon, we've seen them in Colorado, but never in a few months. And we know, because we have our thumb on the pulse of what's, you know, growers in Michigan. It's not because so many new growers came online in that period. That would be preposterous. But this is the stat that tells the tale. In Colorado, in 2020, they did $2 billion in sales. And they did that $2 billion in sales with 6.8 million plants. Mm-hmm. Okay, those are recorded. They're available. That information is available on the internet. In Michigan, in the same time period, they did almost $1 billion in sales with 2.8 million plants. Now, if you look at those numbers, okay, you're talking about a difference of a delta of about almost 2 million plant difference for half of the production. So if you say 2 billion in sales in Colorado with almost 7 million plants, and a billion in sales in Michigan with 2.8 million, what is happening is this. The only thing that could be happening is that caregiver or black market cannabis is entering the legal market. Because if you have $1 billion in sales and the plant count is 2.8, even if you factor in and say, well, you know, maybe Michigan is growing bigger plants with more weight on them. Even if you say you give a half a pound of weight to each one of those 2.8 million plants, it still doesn't it still doesn't jive.
I mean, there's a lot of factors in that realm that I can understand, where California still has a good third to, what is about 40% of still illicit market sales that are dealing with over there, and that's been a lot of points of that. Plus, Michigan being so close to Canada, I can see a lot of products being exported in illegally, more or less, in the same sense. I can see where those kind of things come into play. But now, the one thing I was going to say, too, and sorry to cut you off, is when it comes to the media, you know, I only took the sales stats she actually quoted, but I saw the rest of the factors. I didn't want to look at that because, honestly, it's opinion and speculation. And that's okay. She wanted to back up with what she said. And totally, Marjorie Steele, you know, I appreciate you making the points. I did quote the article, but what I did want to say, too, is that, you know, it's my skepticism of just not just media, but government. They're both in the same now these days to me. But, you know, it's, you know, there are the underlying factors, but like, let's point on the true factors, not the ones that are just speculatory.
Well, like I said, so Michigan, the one thing that Marjorie did hit on, and she's correct, is that, you know, what happened in Michigan is unlike pretty much any other state that legalized. You know, they had 30,000 caregiver licenses, and the caregivers, you know, were the main providers of cannabis. And where this problem exists is the fact that whoever created this regulation back in the day, when this was first created around 2008, 2007, where you give a caregiver the ability to grow 72 plants for 5 patients. I mean, that doesn't make any sense, because 72 plants, you know, could potentially reach about $1 million in retail sales for the year if you do it right. How is it possible that 5 patients could consume that much cannabis? And those caregivers are still allowed to produce that much cannabis and still can sell to their 5 patients.
You should be saving for the future, but savings accounts suck, and investing can be scary. We combine the ease of savings with the real returns of investing. We call it Savevesting, and it's only available in our new app, Stairs. Stairs offers 4 to 6% returns, no fees, and you can withdraw anytime. Do your future a favor. Visit StairsApp.com today.
And that number is what creates this illicit market, because the caregivers had relationships with many of these people who were running these retail sales stores in Michigan before the new legal market came. And there's too many licenses for the government to police it. And so because of that, that, you know, and they're still allowing 72 plants to be grown, it's almost impossible to enforce where that cannabis ends up. And you are correct. I mean, we did our research over the last 6 months. There was a 1,700% increase in cannabis confiscation at the border in Colorado from Canada into Michigan. And, you know, we're talking about thousands, tens of thousands of pounds. And we learned, surprisingly, that, you know, as an attorney, I was shocked to find this out, that the perpetrators were only fined $5,000 a ton for bringing it in. And they were not arrested. They were sent back to Canada, and they were barred from ever entering the United States again. That was the penalty. So, you know, while I do believe that decriminalization has to occur with cannabis, and I don't believe that, you know, we're here in Illinois, where we've got our licenses pending, and, you know, we have a huge social equity movement to bring cannabis into, you know, and make it available for ownership for people who've been unfairly prosecuted for cannabis over the years. I think all that's great. However,
we do need more than just decriminalization. Is that whatever happens, if decriminalization is the plan of the federal government to go forward with, obviously with something like the MORE Act as opposed to the STATES Act, then where's the incorporation of some kind of interstate commerce or some economic regulation so that banks will also start working with the industry as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, like I said, I'm, the article in Leafly was correct. I mean, I do believe those are contributing factors, everything, but at the end of the day, it's a very difficult thing to cure, in the sense that, you know, it is, you know, decriminalized in the sense that there's not very many cannabis busts being taken on in any state that has legalization. But at some point in time, you know, you're looking at Canada and you're saying, okay, was federal legalization going to do it for us? Because in Canada, it's been legal and they're still at a 2-to-1 black market to legalized market ratio. And, you know, they have an abundance because here's the caveat. The cannabis that was confiscated on the Canadian border was high grade commercial quality. It was all packaged. There were edibles, there were vape cartridges, all seemingly being created by legal entities in Canada. And they have an oversupply. So what are they doing? Well, the only place they can get rid of it is the United States. Now, maybe that will curb once the federal legalization occurs, but we're not talking black market cannabis entering United States. It's entering as black market when it gets here, but I think it's being created in the commercial space in Canada, and wow, they have just an oversupply and they're bringing it in the United States because I've read about these confiscations.
Wow.
And you know, they were high quality commercial grade cannabis. So when you factor that in, how do you compete?
Well, you know, but again, that's the fault of the Canadian government. They've made it so strict on all the times we talk about it here in Blunt Business, the issues they go through, the fact that there's only so much they can export, which is also the other thing where Canada had to become the import export of the world, just to try to go and keep up with the supply and demand. So I can understand these Canadian companies going through what they're trying to do. I can sympathize, but the government up there, that's the other problem we have to deal with, is that, you know, what's going to happen when we're able to go and supply and cultivate and harvest so much flower that we need to be able to go and put it somewhere to sell. So, you know, and I want to get back to one thing. And again, I do not want to pile on Marjorie Steele for this article. I'm glad we got a chance to talk about it. So she gave us a good talking point, and I would love to invite her on the program. I know she's based in Michigan. She's talked a lot about this. I throw the welcome out there to Leafly and let Marjorie come on the program. I would love to give her 30 minutes of time to talk about this. But the only thing that does trigger me when I read the article was, could Michigan's cannabis industry bubble be popping already? Like, that's just, you're just going to trigger me. That's all you're going to do with doing that. And I only imagine what stockholders and investors look at that and they say, oh, we're going to get out of this. It's just scary people. And I don't want to fearmonger anybody.
Yeah, no, I'm not trying to fearmonger. I want to qualify. Marjorie was correct in what she came up with. And I think what startles me about it, and I think if Marjorie actually looked at the stat that I gave you, she'd have to say to herself something's going on, because see what it is, it's the difference between a black market and a gray market. Because if Michigan is producing only 2.8 million plants to get to $1 billion in sales, that means, it has to mean that some cannabis is entering the storefront of retailers who are selling it, and they're passing it through metric without anybody knowing. And here's the thing: Michigan doesn't have an enforcement agency yet. Okay, so there's been no busts. There's been no, we were told in the beginning that, you know, we were going to have, you know, people coming by and, you know, audits and random stop by. Now I've checked with many of the legal, you know, growers, the large cultivators in Michigan. No one has seen anybody. And, you know, we're hoping, because we're doing everything legal. We follow everything by the book. And that's the scary part, is that, you know, we don't want to be at an unfair competitive level with people because we're following the rules. And, you know, it is a precarious situation that Michigan, you know, and I don't even know if enforcement really is going to do it, in the sense that, you know, but they're going to really catch all the perpetrators who are doing things the wrong way. But, you know, when you're talking about all of these retailers that are coming online, all of these growers that are coming online, and some of these growers and retailers have been in Michigan for years, and they know the landscape and they know what they can get away with and what they can't. I just can't look at that number and, you know, those numbers and say, you know, how could, you know, you almost have 7 million plants in Colorado to get to 2 billion in sales, and yeah, not even half of that to get to 1 billion, now, not even close to half of that to get to 1 billion.
One more thing I want to bring from the article here. And again, we're just giving time for it. They went on to ask, why aren't Michiganders buying as much from licensed stores and dispensaries? And Where are they getting their product? Which was you mentioned before. You know, we were kind of just talking about that just now. So here's what's explained here. As always with Michigan's historically turbid relationship, quote, with the regulated cannabis, is complicated. In the end, they're saying that consumer sales trends indicate that many cannabis consumers left the regulated market last year to grow their own, a trend which arguably reflects Michigan's cultural traits of self-sufficiency and self-determination. Do you think that how do you think that holds water?
Well, I mean, I would say that would have been speculation, except for, you know, Marjorie pointed out that, you know, that people in the supply chain for the ingredients, you know, for what you need to grow your own cannabis have increased. I mean, it's probably a culmination of a lot of those things, because the demand for it is even greater than it was. So I believe, like I said, but did COVID have something to do with it? Sure it did. I mean, people not getting their stimulus checks. But, you know, if you're talking about that happening in July where it starts to go down, you know, we were already well into the pandemic and the, you know, lots of people were unemployed and they were still buying cannabis. And here's the thing, people are still buying cannabis. And what we know is that, it has a lot to do, you know, and also I will say this too, you know, because we felt this was an avenue for us to get in, you know, with our product lineup, is that you go through, and I wrote an article on this, you know, I go to California and go to a dispensary. It's unbelievable. It is like Six Flags. It's like Kiddie Land. You got more products on the shelves than you know what to do with. Yeah. You go into the average Michigan dispensary and you don't see that. And, you know, I've gone into Michigan dispensaries where there's only two lines of edibles available. And, wow. You know, you go into a dispensary in any part of California, you know, you need an encyclopedia, you know, to know what you're looking at. So it is partly that as well. And, you know, I think Michigan did the right thing with taxation. I mean, their taxation isn't as bad. I mean, we're looking at people who drive from Illinois, where it's recreationally legal, to go over to the border. I have some friends in Michigan who own, you know, who own a dispensary right over the border. And they're getting tons of people driving in from Chicago to go to their dispensary to save the, what is it, 20-something% difference on the taxes. But at the end of the day, when you start to see this precipitous fall, it has to be more because of some level of black market into gray market problem in Michigan. And here's the thing, if you're looking at it and you're saying, wow, there's really no one going to come by and check us out, let's see how long we can do this before they do it. So, you know, Michigan, I know it's a new economy, it's a new system in Michigan, and I'm not downing the state. I think they just need to get moving here on enforcement.
Yeah. And, by the way, I would love Leafly to do a study, if they ever get the chance to, on how often dispensaries are, how often dispensaries on borders of other states, how well they perform as opposed to others, like in metropolitan cities. I can imagine it would be comparable, or some of these dispensaries would do better. Like, for instance, in New Jersey, once those adult treatment centers are opened up, I can imagine the kind of influx from New York City is going to be coming in for product there, or even from Philadelphia, for that matter. I can just only imagine. So I want to just make one thing that, again, as we talk about this article from Leafly, you know, it's well researched. What I will say is the blame, if I'm going to put on anybody, the finger pointing for me is always going to go to government, because they could have stopped some of this. From Canada to the marijuana regulatory agency in Michigan, there's some, again, with price compression, with some issues where the tightening of just making sure whatever kind of, again, it, fine, get your tax money, please. We need to go and give back to the community, make sure that money is well spent. Absolutely. But then again, please, you know, if you're going to do something about this, that Michigan needs to have the room to go and continue to go and grow sales. And that's where government, you know, doesn't really work with the economy. It doesn't really mix well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I don't know about you, but, you know, I was shocked to see that the only penalty for bringing in these massive shipments of cannabis from Canada was a $5,000 per ton fine, and no one was arrested. You know, I mean, when you look at that, I mean, this is over, this is under the Trump administration, and this is July to December, where these busts were made. And, you know, these people, these perpetrators are bringing in truckloads and, you know, 1,700% increase at the Michigan to Canada border, and no one was arrested.
No.
And they were just sent back to Canada. So what deterrent is there at this point? You know, and here's the thing that's really, you know, unfortunate about it is that, you know, we border another country. Michigan borders another country.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, back in the days when Mexico was moving everything through Arizona, you know, that's where it exists, and they find their lanes and they go through. And, you know, just to see that happening though. And like I said, the one thing that was startling to me was to hear, you know, the author of the article say that this was high grade commercial, you know, cannabis. So it's like, you know, now you're talking about that type of black market cannabis entering the space, where, you know, the consumer is like, okay, well, this is the same quality that I'm going to get in the United States, no taxation.
Yeah.
And they're probably selling it, you know, at the same price as a black market, you know, person who's growing cannabis in their basement and selling it to the consumer. So we'll have to keep the
watch alive between Detroit and Windsor, I would imagine. So.
Yeah, I think so. Sorry,
Joe, we got to go ourselves through another commercial break. Well, I want to let you wrap up the point coming up on the other side. And then after the break, I want to talk about that marijuana regulatory agency talking about some other fraudulent activity going on that everybody should be aware of. And again, great conversation here with Joe Ori, co-founder of Six Labs here on Blunt Business, back after a short break.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business. Hey, take a look at this. They're selling smart pots.
They have pot that can make you smart? Where is it?
Not that kind of pot. Smart pots are the best aeration container to grow your plants. Check this out. This is the original fabric container for faster producing, healthier plants. They're made with a superior fabric that delivers high yields. Plus, smart pots are reusable and sustainable, so you can use them over and over again, no matter if you use them indoor or outdoor.
That's very smart, but how good are they for the environment?
Smart pots are BPA-free and lead-free, so you'll always be able to ensure a pure, clean grow, and they're 100% made in the U.S. Over 28 million smart pots have already been sold, so it seems like a smart investment.
Look for smart pots in close to 2,000 garden centers throughout North America and ask for the original fabric container. Find a store near you or order yours online at smartpots.com.
I hope you didn't forget about us, because we're back with Blunt Business on CannabisRadio.com.
We're back with Joseph Ori, co-founder of Six Labs here on Blunt Business. Real quickly, I know you were making a point to follow up of the issues with the illicit market, where there's a lot of product from Canada that is making their way across the border. Oh, go ahead and wrap up the point you were going to make before.
I was just going to say that, you know, it's like I said, I mean, the real issue is black market cannabis entering, you know, Michigan. And then where it's going is another issue. So, you know, obviously, I would say speculate, and I know you said, you know, we can't speculate, but I would say that if all that black market cannabis that's entering through Canada stayed in Michigan, there would be no legal industry. So it's not all staying there. It's spreading out. And, you know, we have, you know, to touch on your point about bordering states, I mean, Michigan has uniquely that it borders a state that, you know, I don't think will be legal. It'll probably be the last state, if it ever becomes legal, is Indiana. So
yeah.
it's a very good port to bring the cannabis in. So, you know, you get through Michigan and, you know, the robust demand that there is in Michigan, and then you obviously can move it through Indiana, where, like I said, you mentioned, you know, I have some friends who actually own dispensaries in Buchanan, Michigan, which is borders Indiana. They get half or more than half of their business comes from Indiana. So if you look at that, it's a great pathway for black market cannabis to be entering into the market. And, you know, as I said before, coupled with, you know, the caregiver issue that Marjorie pointed out, and she did kind of touch on it, if I remember, saying that, you know, those relationships and pipelines, I think she called them, you know, still exist. And what I think she was referring to is that the caregivers who were selling to dispensaries up until a few months ago, they were allowed to sell to dispensaries. They still have those relationships. And if they don't feel that anybody is watching them, you know, and here's the thing. I mean, is it testing? I mean, you know, there's another thing. I don't know if you know, but I think there's been 4 explosions, house explosions, in the last 6 months.
Oh, boy.
In Michigan from hydrocarbon extraction. And, you know, this is – so there are not only caregivers who are providing product into the legal market, but they're actually going as far as using their garage, you know, or house as a hydrocarbon extraction lab. And we know how combustible that could be if you don't know what you're doing. And I believe – I'm not sure, but I believe there was one death involved in this. So, you know, these are the things that, you know, are happening, and yet – you know, if you talk to legislators and you talk to, you know, officials, there hasn't been a cannabis bust in Michigan for anyone in Michigan, you know, in 3 years.
Well, so, let's go ahead and put Michigan on the map. This regulatory agency, we're going to put this on the map again. We're going to go ahead and call this out because, you know, it's just this needs to be publicized. For those that might not be aware, not only what you're talking about right here, let's give another story that also should agitate all of you that working in Michigan trying to go ahead and make a good living there in the industry. MJ Biz Daily recently reported that Michigan's Marijuana Regulatory Agency is warning local cannabis companies that fraudsters are masquerading as regulators and industry executives in a bid to trick employees into sending money or security information about their businesses. And one business lost more than $100,000 because of the scam, and the MRI noted it in a bulletin. In that case, an individual impersonating a business owner requested the employee to transfer the funds to an associate. Put your legal hat on. What in the hell's going on here?
Well, you know, I have to tell you this. When I saw that question, I called one of my partners up, and the only thing that was different about what you just posed was that there was over $100,000 stolen, because I thought it was us, but we didn't have anything stolen because we caught it and we did report it to the MRA.
Oh my God.
You're not going to believe this. So we actually had, I know exactly what they did, because they did it to us. So they did two things to us. Somebody hacked into our computer system, and this is one occasion, and they were able to retrieve our American Express Six Labs business account. And what they did was, is they opened up, they used our account, and they opened up 2 bank accounts with Chase Bank and linked them to our Six Labs account, and tried to, they were actually charging, not, they weren't charging, they were trying to do a reverse payment from there to get reimbursed from payments that we made to American Express.
Oh man.
And then on another occasion, we received an invoice from one of our actual vendors, and we had a 30-day payment plan. We had 30 days to pay the bill.
Right.
And we received an invoice via email that appeared to be from the vendor, and they said, "We can't wait for our money. You need to pay us right now." And luckily, our CFO, who's very attentive to these details, you know, was suspicious and said, why would these guys be changing their gears right now and demanding payment when, you know, that never happened? So we literally contacted the vendor and said, "Hey guys, what's the deal? Why do you want your money right now?" And they said, "What are you talking about? We never sent you that email."
Oh,
and
man.
Wow. They were trying to get like a $10,000 or $12,000 payment, and we had just gotten billed for it, and, you know, obviously remit in 30 days, and they were asking for the money immediately. And I think all this starts, at least from our perspective, I don't know about the $100,000 scam that you're reporting on, how that went down, but I would have to suggest that it has to be with email, because they're hacking into the email and they see you have, you know, you've made an exchange. They see the vendor, they create their own invoice, make it look like it's from the vendor, and say, "Hey, pay us right now. We need our money," thinking that you'll just say, you know, you'll get nervous and say, "Well, I don't want to." And we almost did it. But yeah, I think it's more of a widespread problem in industry than just a cannabis problem.
Okay.
But I would have to suggest that, you know, this was, because what else, I don't think there's anything else that's done anymore that's not done digitally, right? So this $100,000 scam had to be, in my opinion, had to be a hacker who got into the, into the computer. Right. Yeah, it's unbelievable. So now, yeah, we have a strict rule in our company now that we verify every single bill we get, and we call the vendor up and make sure that's, yep.
Well, you have no choice. So let's go ahead and wrap things up. Again, so Six Labs is six, the number six, S-I-X spelled out. SIXlabs.com, or SIX-labs.com. Want to make sure I get that cleared away. So people can go to the website, take a look at what you're doing, and just take people real quickly to the website and just let people know when they can go and find out more information about the product line that'll be upcoming and what are the things they might be working on, and you know, any places that, in social media that people can follow you on. Take 60 seconds to contact our listeners.
Personally, I'm Joseph Ori. I'm Joseph Ori on LinkedIn as well as Twitter, and I have my own webpage, josephori.com. And you can also find more information out at www.six-labs.com. We post a lot of content. I usually put out at least an article or two every month. And you know, we'll have our product lineup posted in probably a few weeks, and anyone who's interested can certainly find out more about what we're doing by going to the website.
So there we go. Joseph Ori, again, co-founder of Six Labs. Make sure when you're looking for the website, you spell out the number six, SIX-labs.com.
It's actually six because there were six founding partners, but it's actually SI, S-I, and then X, which is why the X is in italics, because SI is the universal sign of measurement.
Oh.
So we felt like, you know, we would have a scientific spin on it, and it just worked out that, you know, that's where we went with it. Six founders and then SI with the X. So.
Oh, nice.
That was pretty clever.
Quirky. Very curious thing to do. So, Joe, thanks for being with us here on Blunt Business. Thank you, listeners, for joining us right now. We're completely out of time. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next time. The opinions expressed on this CannabisRadio.com program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of CannabisRadio.com. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.
You should be saving for the future, but savings accounts suck, and investing can be scary. We combine the ease of savings with the real returns of investing. We call it Savevesting, and it's only available in our new app, Stairs. Stairs offers 4 to 6% returns, no fees, and you can withdraw anytime. Do your future a favor. Visit StairsApp.com today.
Hear that? Is that America cheering or a sausage patty sizzling to perfection? It's time to cheer for Egg McMuffin and fresh cracked eggs at McDonald's. It's time to wake up to the aroma of freshly baked biscuits and treat yourself to a real honest-to-goodness morning meal. Breakfast, it's on at McDonald's. Now enjoy a large iced coffee for just $2. Add a breakfast sandwich to make a meal. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with two for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.